Zedon, thinking out loud in color.
Does he know this is just audio?
February 26th, 2005. I'm Tim Shadle. Hi, welcome to Zedon. Today we're going to be finishing up the discussion we started on version control. And I'm going to focus today really only on Subversion and how we use it at work, how we do the some of the things with branching and merging, and how we use it with Java and Eclipse, and really kind of why I like it. So one of the things that first turned me on to looking at Subversion, we talked a lot about it in yesterday, was the atomic commits, you know, being able to send all of your files all at once. But another big thing that has to do with Java, in my opinion, is being able to rename directories, delete them, move stuff around, and if you need to get back at the code, you get back get it back in the way that you had it organized to begin with. Your directory structure, it looks the same when you go pull it out from, you know, January of 1942. It's going to look exactly the same way you had it back then, even though you've made drastic changes and moved things around. So from my perspective, being able to go back in time and get an exact snapshot of how everything looked was really important. And I found myself in Java code, I was really adopting a couple years ago the process of refactoring and naming things according to what they really seem to currently reflect the responsibilities for the particular class or package were. And package names were incredibly difficult to try to change. And I went through a couple of scenarios where we made some pretty big changes to package names, and there weren't very many. But the ones that there were, and we were in both cases, we were using CVS at the time, and the package name changes were just a nightmare. And so the most efficient way for us to end up making those changes was actually to modify the history files on the server, and therefore breaking all of our backwards compatibility to take a look at what the directory structure looked like in the past. Doing that a couple times, it just really seemed to be completely against the whole principle of true version control. So instead, you know, moving over to Subversion, we first adopted it a couple companies ago. From my perspective, we first adopted it at version 0.18 or 1.9, right in there. Because at that point, I mean, Subversion had been self-hosting for quite a long time. It had the branching, it had the tags, it had, you know, the versioning, obviously, and it did a whole lot of stuff back then. And they were mainly working out some bugs that really didn't apply to what we were going to be doing in our everyday work. So we adopted it. We moved all of our CVS repository contents over to it internally, the guy that was, you know, in charge technically was quite happy with the way it turned out. We went through, I think, two different database format upgrades, but, you know, those would take, what, 10 minutes at the most. You come in the morning, you find out that there's a new version of Subversion, you pull it down, 10 minutes to export your data, import it back, and everything was just perfect. So we never had any problems. And then ever since Subversion has gone to 1.0, I think that they've really shown mature process from the open source standpoint. They've been very conscientious about API and breaking the API and database format changes. In particular, they've promised that there will be no database format changes at all in any of the 1.1x releases. So anything that any version that starts with 1.whatever is going to have the exact same database format. So in 1.1, they offered the file system storage mechanism instead of DB, Berkeley DB. But from my understanding, basically, it's, you know, the format, of what the tools are expecting, the schema, I would assume, is not changing at all during the lifespan of the 1.0 versions, 1.1, 1.2, all of those. So from that standpoint, they're very understanding about how issues related to doing upgrades. So when 2.0 comes out, they might change the database format, but for now, they're not doing anything like that. Another thing that shows me that they're very conscientious of the needs of real enterprise-style users is the way that they make their APIs completely backward compatible, so that any 1. Any 1.x version of client can talk to any 1.x version of server using the lowest level of APIs that's common between them. So, for example, if I have a 1.2 client, I can talk correctly with a 1.0 server, and I can do anything that the 1.0 API allows me to do. Now, say in 1.2, they've been talking about allowing explicit locking, which, you know, we talked a little bit about yesterday, and I'm not really in favor of explicit locking except in the case of large binary files or whatever. Like, you would not be able to use a 1.0 server would not recognize that particular feature, but if you had, say, a 1.3 client and a 1.2 server, then you would be able to use that feature appropriately. Some of the things that came out with the 1.1 is you can use the file system. If you're paranoid and you don't like all your data being hidden behind a Berkeley DB, we haven't found it to be a problem. We've had a couple instances where the Berkeley DB locks, we just run an SVN admin cleanup and we're done in no time. So we've really been quite pleased with the way that we can work with Subversion at work, and it has a very clean syntax on the command line. I really love using the command line. I used to think people were nuts when they did that, but if you have any questions, totally read the Pragmatic Programmer book, and they've got a section in there that really, I think, in my mind, expresses why so many people love using the command line, because there's such flexibility and power with it. But beyond that, Subversion's got really great support in, for example, the Tortoise SVN client. It does a lot of stuff. It has all of the latest features from Subversion available, and it snaps right into your Windows Explorer. So you just open up your Windows File Explorer, you're browsing around your folders, and you can see which files are versioned. You know, you can see which things have uncommitted changes. And it really does an excellent job. And so a lot of the programmers at work prefer using that client. You can do all sorts of things with it. So you can find the link to that on the Subversion site, and I'll probably throw it in the show notes as well. Beyond that, there's actually a okay client for Eclipse. In previous versions of Eclipse and earlier versions of the of the Subclips module, it's kind of been a little flaky, but I think they're finally to the point now where it seems a lot more stable. The Eclipse synchronized view, I've heard, works quite well in the most recent version of the Subclips, and the most recent milestone build of Eclipse 3.1. I'm not sure how well it works in 3.0. It probably is just as stable. But that is something that I find as a Java developer is really important, because at that point I can use Eclipse and do my refactorings that will rename packages, and the Subclips module picks up on that. It recognizes there's a refactoring going on, and it does the Subversion rename commands, you know, the move commands, to allow me to rename my package. And at that point, not only is my code taken care of and all of my Java files updated with the right package names and my local file structure is changed appropriately, but also all the version control commands have been run, so that when I am done, all I need to do is commit, and then Subversion will now have an updated directory structure with a package renaming. So that alone is one of the absolute best reasons to move to Subversion if you haven't already done so. Package renaming and just great integration with the Windows Explorer, the command line, and the Eclipse plugin. It really, I think, has a good rounding out of the tools that are needed as a developer. And then on the flip side, as your developer trying to learn about what the other APIs that are around or in your company or trying to browse through your repository, there's two great things that come from having Subversion. We run Subversion Server behind Apache for a couple reasons. First of all, it's just dead easy to do. You just drop a couple lines in your Apache HTTP .conf file, and boom, you've got /SVN pointed at a family of repositories. We've got maybe 5 Subversion repositories. And it's real easy for us to just add more repositories, and they just automatically show up under Apache. So it's real easy to deliver it that way. All of the firewalls don't have to worry. We only allow it internally, and HTTP, we haven't seen any performance issues internally. Another thing is it makes it real easy to check to see if the repository is up or to browse to a file, because you can just browse to it. You just HTTP to your Subversion address, and the directory listing will come up, and it's not an Apache directory listing, but a Subversion directory listing, and it will show you the latest release. And so you can browse, and if you want to link to a file, say a particular document you've got in version control, you can give somebody that link, and you can send it through email. And if they look at it 6 months later, they're going to see the most up-to-date version of that particular file. So you can say this is a link that will always have the most recent version of our coding standards or of our business purchase agreement template in Word or whatever you want. And so that is an excellent a side effect of having of Subversion. Another thing is it will integrate perfectly with any of the Apache authentication modules. And so what we've done is we've used the SSPI module from Apache, threw it in, and now all of our Subversion usernames and passwords, the authentication happens through Apache, which dumps it over to our Windows Active Directory server. And so at that point, we've got a way to log into Subversion, and anytime anyone shows up in our organization, the same username and password will work once they've got it set up. We need to add only the authorization line that says which repositories they're allowed to access. We also, our organization forces you to change your password every so many months, and when you update your password, immediately Subversion uses the same password, so there's one less password to keep track of and to have out of sync. So it's really awesome from that standpoint. Another thing that we've really enjoyed is having the VueCVS Python-based website that actually can browse not only CVS repositories but Subversion repositories. And so you see this a lot with open source projects. If you go to like Apache's website and you take a look at what they've got, they're putting all their source code out. You can browse their CVS repository through the VueCVS tool. But the VueCVS tool, you can also see if you go to Subversion's own source code, if you try to browse the source code for the Subversion project itself, you can browse it through the VueCVS module as well, and it recognizes all of the different nuances of Subversion, the different repository numbers, and you can do things. You can go back to a file, and you can see all of the different histories that have happened with that particular file. You can select different versions and view the differences side by side. You can also link directly to a particular version of the file. So say again you wanted to send a link via email, but you always wanted the link to point to a particular version with a VueCVS tool, you can do that kind of thing. And on top of that, when you're using the VueCVS tool, you can have it again understand all the different repositories that you have available to you. And you can even go and now see the change sets. This is something that is just not even in existence with CVS, but with Subversion, every time you make a commit, we talked about that it's an atomic commit, so there's 15, 20 files maybe in this particular commit, and that commit is commit number 312 or whatever, And so then your repository has been updated to version 312, and so now you know what the repository looked like at version 312. Well, with VueCVS, the website, you can actually say, well, let me go browse around and I want to look, even though we're on version 518, let me go back and see what it looked like at version 312. And you can browse the website sticking to that particular version. And you can also click and see a list of all files that were sent and the log that was sent for commit number 312. So you can see each commit as it comes through, which files were involved, under which path names, and the log that goes with it. So, I mean, between these collection of tools, between the command line, the Windows Explorer plugin, the Eclipse plugin, Apache authentication modules you can use, the regular Apache web browsing that you get just through having it be WebDAV, and through the VueCVS Python Apache plugin that you can get, you really get a very effective tool that integrates quite well with just about everything else. And on top of that, if you're using the Jira issue tracking, you can actually have, there's a plugin for Jira that when you look at a bug, will go to Subversion, pull out all the logs, and take a look to see which commits were done with the Jira issue number in their log. So really, there's a huge amount of tool support that is growing up around Subversion. And especially if you're in the Java realm, or really there's a lot of other realms that this could apply to, but there's quite a bit of support that, for me, says if you're doing Java work, Subversion is definitely the way to go if you're looking for a free, very solid, very robust version control system. So check it out, and I hope you have a good experience with it.
If you've got something to say, go ahead and leave a comment on the weblog at timshadle.com, or send me an email at z.feedback@gmail.com. That's zdotfeedback@gmail.com. See ya.